to happen. Do I think it'll get to happen? Get rid of the DAs? Only the commissioner is on. I think it's too ingrained right now. What and if the teams ever have interleague or interdivision or whatever you want to say, the realignment where we have the Cubs playing the yes, Don, thank you. Where we have the Cubs playing the White Sox, or Kansas City playing somewhere, or the two New York teams playing, or whatever the thing may be,
somewhere.
Then something has to be the thing that is always kind of disappointing is that it's the only professional sport for the postseason play you have a different set of rules governing championship play year to year. You have the American leagues having their rules of 1 year, or the National League the next year. All other professional sports rules are standardized. So, no, I don't have coffee. Black. Do you have espresso? With a twist. Excuse me. So, that always seems kind of strange that, you have a World Series with different rules. 1 year the DH, and next year not the DH, or whatever. It just didn't seem right. I don't know, but I don't foresee it. I can't see it right now because it's too ingrained. It's too subtle. Baseball is very slow to move. Yeah, all the way around.
It would take years before the kids coming up had regained those skills that haven't been ingrained.
That's true.
You'd have a whole generation of pitchers from the American League who never have had to hit. You watch them go over to the National League now, the ones that are traded.
Surprisingly enough, though, I think a couple home runs that have been hit in the World Series have been hit by American League players.
Like Mallett. Let's see. I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but I'll ask. The problems that Dick Allen had with Gene Mock and Bob Skinner, did the rest of the team sympathize with Allen?
I don't know what the rest of the team thought. And I really don't be quite honest with you, I don't what Dick Allen, what problems were perceived with Allen and Mott and or Skinner, I didn't worry about. I only had my problems to worry about. And I never worried about anyone else's problems. I didn't see the things the way. I don't remember Dick Allen as being any type of troublemaker or anything. He's always been nice to me. He was always nice to players. He never had problems with players. I certainly never had any problem. I count him as a good friend of mine. I've had problems with managers over my career, disagreements and differences and all that. That's part of the game. But as far as Dick Allen, thank you very much. I wouldn't know. I really wouldn't. No, he could play ball.
Sure could.
Pound for pound, I don't think there's a man who can hit a baseball field.
I know I'm going to interview him when I get back out to the West Coast.
I'll see him this weekend in Chicago.
I am.
So, I'm going to the Heroes of Baseball game this weekend. So I'll see him. And I saw him the last one I was with at St. Louis because we were involved in that 100th anniversary of the Cardinals. And I had a Dick quite a bit.
Yeah, I've talked with him, and I've talked with his kids, trying to get a hold of him. His kids are very good.
Well, Dick Allen, I mean, there could be 50 Dick Allens in the league right now, and they're all doing their thing, and they're all outspoken, or all whatever, or they're not understood, or whatever. Dick Allen, because maybe he was one of the first free spirits, or free thinkers, or whatever, back then, when you weren't allowed to be yourself that much. You know, it's nothing now. What's Jose Canseco? What's Ricky Henderson? What's what's Barry Bonds right now? What are any of these guys? I mean, are they Dick Allen of 20-some years ago or what?
Maybe he stood out because there were fewer then.
What's a guy can wear a mustache or a beard now or an earring or whatever? You couldn't do that back then. You had to have your hair cut short. You had to kowtow and do this and do that. And it's a different time, different era. Things change.
Would you rather have been playing now?
I love the era that I played. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think the 60s and the 70s, the players I played with and against are some of the greatest players ever. And the history agrees with me, because there's tons of them going into the Hall of Fame right now. It was a wonderful time. A wonderful time. Tough times, and a lot of new ground broken in a lot of areas, in particular what we're talking about right now, for the players. But it was great. It really was.
When Marvin Miller would talk to the players and educate them, did he focus on the big picture and the long run, that we have to work toward a goal of getting more say-so for the players, or was he focusing on one step at a time?
Oh, no, he had some vision. It was going to take some time. It was going to be down the road. I mean, things will change, but not, I mean, you're not going to just, things aren't just going to happen so dramatically that it's going to completely reverse the roles of the players and the owners, as we knew it, per se. There's going to be some tough times. They're going to challenge. And they have a lot more money and a lot more things up there. At their disposal than we did. But we were really what the people came to see. We're the players. We had the talent. And we're the ones that brought the people to the stadium.
Tom Haller told me that the thing that baffled him about the owners was, he said, you'd think the owners would want the players to be well informed, to be optimistic about advances and improving their working conditions, and instead it seemed like they begrudged you almost anything that you wanted to do for yourselves. That was the baffling thing to him.
Oh, it was baffling. It was baffling at the time, obviously. The players never knew for all those years. Just how sweet the pie was. Because we were never allowed in the bakery, so to speak. I mean, we were the ingredients that, you know, made up the pie and everything, but we were never. The person has a whole pie, and he's used to having the whole pie. Guys, you want to split it up. But the players bless their hearts, you know, were stupid. They still loved it better than anything else they would want to do, even under those conditions. I mean, I never thought of the conditions as such. I mean, I just loved playing baseball. I was happy. I mean, I had to make my $7,000 a year, minimum. But it was only later on that we realized it was a very limited career. In fact, the the pension to be busted. The pension was dropped from 5 years to 6 years because they found out the average career is 4.5 years, and that would include, that would bring into a vested membership, I don't know how many more players, or, you know, just from dropping it from 5 to 4. And so
that was in 69, that was part of it.
And so everyone wanted this, what they wanted to do is be paid what they were worth. I think that's anyone wants to in any vocation, any job. Pay what you're worth. And most of the time it was the veterans getting most of the money. I mean, they were around, they'd done the job, obviously, but the guys that, he couldn't play 20 years because the average career is 4 years. He'd never get to good money. It wasn't really that good of money. So, I mean, when I thought about Willie Mays or Mantle or those guys making $100,000 was, when you think $100,000, that's awesome. I mean, that would be the max. I wasn't going to make $100,000 because I wasn't a Willie Mays. But that's what a rookie gets this time. Of course, inflation and evolution, all that's going to bring monetary standards up and higher. But you just paid because you love it. You really did.
Did anybody really think back in, say, the late 60s that the reserve clause would ever be
I don't think so. I don't think too many guys concerned themselves with it. I mean, until Marvin Miller came into the picture, it didn't do any good thinking about the stuff because it wasn't going to get changed anyway. It talked about the golden rule. Then that has the gold makes the rules. That was the owners, and we just suited up and played hardball. We tried to get a couple thousand here or whatever, and here or there, and stay healthy and play for 1 year and get a contract the next year. That's what it was all about.
It's really impressive when you look back to see how he drove a little wedge here, a little wedge there. Finally.
Well, this is a great advantage. Very, very. Well, he was a steel negotiator. Labor negotiations. And I guess I don't know. Owners never, obviously, were never confronted with a man. You know, of his strength and character and his determination. Being right. I mean, history bears it out. But, it was great listening to him and seeing he was always so calm. This man was so calm, he just had a calming effect on everyone around him. Owners would rant and rave and say things in the paper and everything, and Marvin was just kind of chuckling away to laugh. Eventually, we got to talk, we got to sit down and talk, and that's what proved to be.
I see him as kind of a counterpuncher in a way. He knew if he sat around long enough, the owners, since they were all going in 20 or 24 different directions.
Well, that's true.
He'd know they'd say something or do something that would give him his opening.
They started having their own infighting and their own doubts, and there were hawks and doves amongst themselves. And so they not only were dealing with Marvin and the Players Association, they had to deal with themselves.
They were their own worst enemies.
Not all owners love all the other owners. Some of them liked, some of them liked each other and some of them didn't. Same as any type of business, I guess. But it was interesting, and it was there was a wonderful time. There were tough times, and there was certainly a lot of trepidation and not knowing what was going to happen. Not knowing, I mean, people had mortgage bills to pay and everything, and no one was making a lot of money. If those checks stopped coming, you're in trouble. And, of course, initially, the people just wanted to see the game, and I think they were for the Celtics, probably for the players. But I don't think they were, only because they didn't know any more than we did, for that matter, probably. But I think in the end, it just amounted to sitting down across from each other and discussing the issue as mutual respect.
Miller eventually convinced them that they had to.
But of course,
negotiate in good faith.
Sure.
That was.
Well, there were laws of the land. That supposedly guarantee that, and do guarantee that. Even though the same laws of the land make baseball exempt from certain laws that pertain to other businesses in this country. Strange, I never really figured it all out, but. I still don't. It gets more complex. Back then, it was pretty basic.
Look what's going on with the football union now. They've got that antitrust thing. And I read the accounts of the stances that the two sides are taking that. Seems like what baseball went through 20 years ago. Hockey strike is
the same kind
of thing. The hockey people are where you worked.
It's hard to believe other professional sports are that far behind, but we were the forerunners. We're the one that took the giant step. We went on a limb. And we stuck to our guns.
That's why in that first letter I wrote to you, I see it as very heroic. What you guys did, it was really uncharted water.
It sure was. All we want to do is play ball and make a good living at it. But if they had limited, I'm sure if they put a cap on like you do professional basketball now, guys still would have played. No doubt about it. You would have put a cap of 30,000. I was only making like 25,000 after 7 years in the major leagues. 25,000 after 7 years.
That's when you and Carlton were traded for each other.
That's right.
Because
John Quinn only wanted to offer me $10,000 raise after that year I had in Philadelphia. And I said no. Again, and I got traded for it. He showed me. I ended up in St. Louis.
Right, and they showed Carlton.
And then, and then we signed for what we wanted with the new teams, our respective new teams.
Yeah, it was okay for the new team to give you what you wanted.
That's right.
Probably just a handful of instances in all of baseball history where somebody said take it or leave it and the guy left it. You go back to like Home Run Baker in 1918 left it. Ed Rausch left it 1 year with you. Very rarely did anybody leave it.
Very new. We knew it too. I mean,
now it's gone the other way.
There's a story of one of the first free agents. I forget it. Maybe it was Oscar Gamble. I'm not sure. Oscar had gone in. He wasn't an everyday player with the Phillies. He was part-time. Well, he played once in a while. He wasn't called a great player or anything. In fact, he went to the Yankees. Oscar had gone in.
Oh, that's right. We now get to move on.
All of another one of these players?
Sure.
Good luck with the mail on this one.
Yeah, it's like 350 off your price.
Oh, I see. So, yes, you know, Oscar's going in, you know, this one they're getting about $1 million for these 4 or 5 year deals or something like that. I mean, that's a lot of money, it still is. Oscar went in hoping to get $1 million or whatever, the Yankees said, we're going to get one offer only. $2.35 million. Where's the pen? I mean, it was taking $900 million, man. That'd be great. Part-timer and all that. One offer, $2.35 million or something. What do I sign?
They're still doing it. But they gave Pascual Perez $5.7 million.
You know, giving guys millions and guys that are 30 games under 500, pitchers. What's giving them $6 million contracts. I can't even, you know, it's not my line to worry about that.
It's inconceivable in a way. The consensus is that TV money's going to go down. Something's going to have to give when that happens.
Yeah, right? That's the consensus.
Is the Players Association going to be... prepared to yield a bit on that?
I have no idea. I'm not privy to anything that the present Players Association is doing there. Although we do, I do get things from Players Association time to time, just as being an alumni. But I don't know. I have no idea. And I'm management now anyway. Well, I don't know.
Seems like something's going to have to give. I mean, if the pie is this big and the next pie is only that big,
you can only carve it up so many ways. That's right. Like Yogi Berra said when he went in for his pizza that one time. The guy says, "Would you like 16 pieces or 8 pieces?" And Yogi says, "Make it 8. I'm on a diet."
Not that on.
Well, I'm always interested in what's happening to you know, the state of the game, and obviously. I'm always concerned because it is the greatest game in the world. And, because of my love for the game and for the people involved, and for future players, the future for the fans, and for the overall. The game itself. I was concerned. I'm not just happy that I play or whatever, get my pension or whatever, and I don't care what happens else. No players like that.
All the players.
Oh, bless your heart.
Thank you. Thanks very
much.
And
I figured it out with
Tom. Okay, was it half?
Yeah, $350. Right, on $1. Only half price on $1.
Oh. Not both.
Okay?
Get
back the other way,
huh? Buy one lunch, get one for a half price. I got it. That's kind of tricky.
Yeah.
Oh, that's better than that.
Fine. Yeah, okay. I got no idea. What would you do to speed games up? Seems to be a problem that's getting worse in the major.
Well, I don't think the batter should have to keep stepping out, walk 15 feet away. I mean, step in there, stay in there. I mean, you want to step 1 foot out, I mean, 1 foot still in the box and 1 foot out, I mean, to make an adjustment of gloves or whatever, and step right back in. Not that.
I remember when George Foster used to be 1 foot to do that.
Used to be 20 seconds for a pitcher to have to throw the ball. Didn't affect Bob Gibson. It took him an average of 7 seconds to throw the ball. And
do you preach to your pitchers working rapidly?
Work fast, throw strikes, change speeds.
Yep.
Yes, I do. Keep the defense alert behind you and move the game along. So, I mean, but But is baseball a game to put a time clock on? Or is it, I mean, do people really care? What? I mean, it's one of the games where you don't try to beat the clock. I mean, pro football, they figured out there's only 12 minutes of playing time.
Yeah.
I mean, actually playing time, and then, I mean, there's back to an hour, all this year, those take 3 hours or something.
I doubt that there's more than a half hour in a baseball game.
It is fun, but I mean, is it? Do you go out to the park and relax, enjoy, and be there? Or do you want, I mean, what do you want? 15 minutes quicker?
Yeah. When I go to the ballpark, I want to spend as much time there as possible. I want to see him play 13 innings every night. And I think a lot of casual fans and people I talk with, who are, if they're disenchanted with baseball, it's because they sit down and watch a game on TV, they're going to have to devote 3.5 hours to the same thing. I worry about that. I'd rather listen to a game on radio than watch
it. I love
TV
listening
anyway.
To it. Now, when I head back, first week in September, and I'll go back Cleveland, Ohio, and past Cincinnati, and then below Milwaukee and Minnesota. Right? I just throw out the game.
I know. It
sounds great.
I love it. I can envision.
I can envision what's happening and everything. And then there's that, you know, they get the different banner from the play-by-play and color and stuff. And, you know.
Red Sox have great announcers, I think. I really enjoy it.
Who do you like?
Castiglione and Bob Starr.
Bob Starr is wonderful.
Yeah, I listen
Bob
to
with St. Louis.
And I listened to him when he did the Angels games.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's his name? Castiglione?
Joe Castiglione. Yeah, they're a good team.
That's a different, and I love series and playoffs on radio.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I take the TV, but if I gotta run to an errand, do an errand or something, I get away from the house, whatever, and the radio's right on, and you get different stuff. I mean, then Jack Buck comes back on and stuff.
Thank you.
Baseball announcers and broadcasters are different from TV people.
Yeah, I've lived in Southwest for 10 years, and listening to Vin Scully, of course, was a delight.
Great.
In Cooperstown last year, I didn't have a television. I got an apartment about a half a mile from the museum.
Beautiful town.
Oh yeah. I think I could get 10 or 11 different teams.
Well,
some of them not till maybe after 10 o'clock, but I got everything from the White Sox down to Baltimore and Philly and everywhere in between. Oh, yeah. That's what I grew up. I grew up listening to all these guys. I grew up in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to listen to Wade White do the Reds games and Bob Prince.
Remember the Green Weenie, man. Yep, Bob Prince.
Yes, we had him all the way.
Oh, even Harry Carey was down in St. Louis. And,
yeah.
Jack Buck, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Richie Ashman on the Phillies game.
Sure.
All that. Callis.
I heard Bill Campbell just retired from WIT Radio there. Did you hear anything about that?
No.
WIT there in Philly? Super Campbell is a great guy. Great guy.
I was a Reds fan, so I used to try to catch Wade White and Joe Nuxhall.
Nuxie.
In the Reds games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was listening the night that Ken Johnson pitched that no-hitter and lost
in the air against
Willie Fox. The ball go through his legs.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, let's get out of here. I got to go. no-hitter in the Babe Ruth World Series.
Second no-hitter in the history of the Babe Ruth World Series. In fact, they drove in a winning run against the host team. Same bunch of kids that had gone to the Little League World Series 3 years earlier. Same guys. Just 3 years older, of course, but I lost the game to Kankakee, Illinois in 1958. 2-1, a guy by the name of Tom Fowler. I'll never forget this. Hit a home run in the bottom of the sixth inning. Beat me 2-1. They in turn went on to play the Monterey team that were back-to-back world champions. Angel Marcias, Hector Torres, who later played with the Cubs and maybe Houston.
Astros, yeah.
Yeah, shortstop. Angel Marcias is ambidextrous. And anyway, they went on to beat Kankakee 10-0 in the finals. So. But anyway, we played there in Williamsport in 58, and 3 years later, basically the same bunch of kids, we played in the Babe Ruth World Series, and I pitched the second no-hitter in the history of the Babe Ruth World Series, drove in the only run, won 1-0, struck out 15, and I think it was double elimination. We lost the first game, then we lost our third game, but it was quite exciting.
Is that what the scouts take notice of you then? Is that what made
scouts have taken notice of me, I think. Even before that, I had tremendous success in the league and into Babe Ruth. Well, Babe Ruth, of course, you're getting up there. You're 15 years old and getting on into high school and played Legion ball. We had great success, too, with Legion ball. That group of kids that came out of the Rose City, Madison area there in Portland, Oregon, we won our first high school state championship. I pitched the quarterfinal, the semifinal, the finals. We had a 6-day period and won all the games. And there wasn't much doubt that I wanted to turn pro. But my dad, being an educator, was concerned about my education. And I had a lot of scholarship offers for not only baseball, but football and basketball, too. But my heart was with baseball, no doubt about it. And,
made the right choice, obviously.
Well, I think so. I mean, I would never change anything. If I had to do it again, I would make the same decision. Of course, I'd like to get a lot more money. Than $1.55 million these days is nice to sign, but I signed for $12,000, but I was in the big leagues the next year at age 18 because of the bonus rule effect at that time.
Yeah.
So different times, but still wonderful.
Your major league debut, you had a tough act to follow.
It was not my debut, as a matter of fact.
Your first major league start?
No, my first major league start. My first major league start was in San Francisco. My first major league win was very historic and memorable because it came on the heels of the second game of a perfect game, same line. My first major league start was in San Francisco against the Giants, and I gave up home runs to Willie Mays and to Willie McCovey. This isn't so unusual.
Welcome to the bigs.
Yeah. But I was just the year before I was pitching against high school kids, and now I'm in the real big time trying to get out, well, future Hall of Famers and some of the greatest players that have played this game.
Did the bonus baby rule hurt you?
Not,
you up there?
Not that year. Not that year, because I promptly was sent down the next year to AAA, where I proceeded to lead the league in losses and learning my trade at Little Rock. But I won five games that year in 64 and contributed. Johnny Briggs and I we had to be kept because anything at that time over $8,000, $8,100 or $81,000, you had to be retained by the parent club the next year, otherwise you were subject to the draft, I think maybe $25,000 or something like that. And obviously the club thought enough of me and my future that they wanted to protect me, and as a result I was retained on the Major League roster for the whole season of 64. Interesting year, to say the least, being involved in a pennant race, but and then blowing the is this
salad dressing. Okay. Put it in me.
It's
It's the invisible salad dressing.
Details. Yeah. The Chico
Interesting.
Ruiz. I still remember, I was 13 years old that year. I remember listening to the game where Chico Ruiz stole home.
Yeah, with Frank Robinson up with that. Two strikes on him, too.
In the ninth inning.
Couldn't swing. Otherwise, he would probably would have driven Chico Ruiz into left field seats. But it started even earlier than that. Willie Davis stole home on Maury Stevens, I think, in the 14th, 15th, or something like that. And in out in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But you can replay those last couple weeks in your head a billion times, and I'm sure everyone has. Everyone involved with them, everyone watch, everyone following the Phillies, but strange things happen, which happens in baseball. Perfect double play ground ball, to, thank you, to Tony Taylor. And, the base loaded, the ball hits a pebble or whatever over his head. I mean, Callison hitting three home runs in a game, Dick Allen hitting home two or three home runs in a game, and we're still not winning. And, it was, and I really didn't know how to react. Being thrust into a kind of race at such a young age. I didn't start any games in the last month or so, although I relieved in three and did well.
Almost nobody started besides Bunning.
Bunning and Short, and that's what happened.
When you got back in 67, you were ready then, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I went to the 65. I played in Little Rock to get Wilson's dressing.
Oh, thanks, I got some.
And then I had to. Then I went into the service. I went into the reserves and had to do my active duty in the winter of 65. And so I missed all of spring training, at least the majority of it. And as a result, was after I got out of the Army there in my active service, I was sent out to San Diego, which was our AAA affiliate at the time. And pitched myself into shape and did well there. Pitched in four games, won three.